Hi, thank you for joining us today. My name is Judith Christina Belzer, and I am currently obtaining my doctorate in marriage and family therapy from North Central University online. I have a master's degree from Michigan School of Professional Psychology, now Michigan School of Psychology, with a bachelor's degree from Michigan State University. Today, we have Dr. Marlene Watson. Now, Dr. Watson, I'm looking at your website, and it says that you're the former chair and associate professor in the Couple and Family Therapy Department at Drexel University in Philadelphia, which is awesome, and I appreciate you being here with us today. I know that you're a licensed couple and family therapist with a private practice, and we have a few questions for you today. Now, historically, African Americans are a prime example of a minority group in the U.S. that has been underserved by our mental health system. Since Obamacare, that has changed, but what I'm curious about is what can we do to get African Americans into mental health services? And I guess this is more of a two-part question, but what can we do to make them stay? Because we don't want them coming in, starting services, and then leaving before we can fully help and do our job. So what do you think, Dr. Watson? Hello, I'm Dr. Watson, and thank you for having me here. Now, I know you go by your middle name, Christina, so if that's okay, I will refer to you by that. So, Christina, I think the first thing we need to do is become active in the community. We need to get our faces out there. We need to be recognizable by some members, like clergy, for example, of the community. So when people of African American descent are facing a mental health illness or a mental health issue, they go to their clergy members for help and they say, "Oh, you know what? I know a therapist. This is someone that I know. This is someone that I trust. And let me give you her number." And hopefully these people will feel comfortable first off coming to us. Because if they don't feel comfortable, that's the first thing that is going to shut the door for them coming to therapy. Once we can get them into our office, something that we need to be doing is being culturally sensitive and being culturally aware. We have to understand that historically, these were oppressed people. They had to fight for their rights to even be seen as equal. And when they're walking in the door, automatically, they might not trust you. They might think, "Who is this person? Can I trust them? Are they part of the problem? Are they part of a group that has been keeping us down? Are they part of the problems of racism?" So off the bat, we need to be aware of that. Okay, now, Dr. Watson, tell us how we can be culturally sensitive and being culturally aware. Okay, sure. Some ideas I have are being aware of some of the microaggressions that they face on a daily basis in your community. Is it a small town with predominantly white people? Look at the community that you're in. Look at where they're coming from. What is your city like? Now, I know that you are in Flint, Michigan. You guys are having a water crisis right now. Who is the water crisis affecting mainly? It's not the white people in the suburbs. It's the African Americans in the city that don't have the money or the resources to do anything else about it. I mean, they have to shut off the water to their homes and live off bottled water. That means they cook with it. They brush their teeth with it. They, you know, if they want to take a bath, they fill it up with bottled water. You know how long that would take to fill up a bathtub with bottled water, let alone boiling the water so it can actually be warm enough to bathe in? I mean, being aware of that is the first step, is a hugely important piece of being culturally sensitive and being culturally aware. And another thing is being culturally aware of your background. You know, I mean, let's say, for example, Christina, that you're the therapist. You have an African American man coming to you for therapy. Let's say he's having problems in his marriage, okay? Let's say him and his wife are having problems. He goes to his pastor, says, I don't know what to do. He and the pastor talk for a while. The pastor says, you know what? I think therapy might be beneficial. The man says, okay, who do you know? Who can I go to? Who's a good therapist? Since you have been out there meeting people, saying that you're a friendly face, you're a safe space, he gives this man your number. So the man comes in. You know, Christina, another thing that I think it's important to remember is that overall, mental illness in African American families, they carry a stigma. Okay, it's not suggested right off the bat, oh, you're depressed, you have anxiety. Oh, go seek therapy. That's not something that is not always accepted for fear of judgment. And I think that happens in actually a lot of ethnicities. But for right now, we're talking about African Americans. So I think that's something to be remembered, which is another sticking point for going out there and becoming someone that is known in the community. You know, we want to do something to become a friendly face. You know, because there's a general belief of a mistrust of the mental health providers. They're fear. They're afraid of getting a therapist that's culturally insensitive. Okay, thanks for that, Dr. Watson. Now, I'm actually reading an article that was published in Contemporary Family Therapy in 2008. Oh, excuse me. It says it was published online in 2007. Now, obviously, with Obamacare, our approach to healthcare has changed. More people have insurance, which provides mental health coverage, than ever before. So times are changing about that. And we want to be approachable. We want therapy to be an option for African Americans as well as for others, but African Americans, since this is who we're talking about for this podcast here. Now, here's a fact that I find extremely interesting. Only a third of all African Americans with a mental illness get mental health treatment when they need it, while two-thirds of non-Hispanic whites receive mental health care when they need it. And African Americans living in the community, they tend to have overall rates of mental illness similar to those of non-Hispanic whites. So tell me, Dr. Watson, why do you think this is? Why are they receiving treatment less? You know, Christina, I'll tell you why I think that is. And I think part of it's from the stigma that comes with going to see a therapist. And another part of it, what we talked about earlier, is that they don't feel comfortable. They don't trust the system. They don't trust that you have their best interests, that you're going to understand where they've come from, that you're going to understand their background, that honestly, they don't trust that you're going to be able to help them because you haven't walked in their shoes. Another thing, Christina, that I think your listeners should know is that when African Americans do face a mental health problem, and a decision is made to seek outside help, their first step is to rely on a primary caregiver or, you know, their doctor that they see regularly as their first entry point, okay? Now, African Americans tend to be overrepresented in inpatient psychiatric care, which is something else we need to examine. And let me tell you why that is. It's because they probably put off seeking treatment until symptoms are so severe that they need inpatient care. They let the anxiety build, the depression build, whatever it is, they let that build until it is just, it's out of control. It can't be handled. They can't wait a week or 2 weeks to get in to see a therapist. Now, they need to be hospitalized in a psychiatric ward or whatever you have. And Christina, I also think that it's important to know that African Americans are more likely to seek primary care for a possible mental health issue after first relying on family, church, home remedies, friends, neighbors. And this is due to a carryover issue of beliefs from the rural South about social support networks and mental health issues. This model was actually first described by Reger and his colleagues in 1978 as the de facto mental health service systems, in contrast to what we have now, which is formal mental health systems. You know, Christina, I think it's important to just remember that everybody, no matter what race, what religion they are, they want to feel heard. They want to be treated fairly. They want to be seen as a person. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what we all want. None of us want to go to any type of doctor, whether it's, you know, therapist, OBGYN, any type of doctor in the health industry, we don't want to go there and be not, felt like we're not heard, felt like we're not seen, thrown a diagnosis or medication and then tossed out the door. None of us want that. You know, if that happened to you or to I, we wouldn't go back to that person. And I think at the end of the day, that is the most important thing for us to remember. We need to communicate. We need to make sure that our clients feel heard. I want to thank you, Dr. Marlene Watson, for being on the show tonight. Yes, Christina, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it, and hopefully we can talk again soon. Thank you.